The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com. Metaxas Show with your host, Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. This is the Eric Metaxas Show. I'm playing the role of Eric Metaxas, the host. This is the show. I apologize. This is the best we could do. But here's the thing. We're going to make it up to you. We're going to get an entertaining and informative guest. Not today, but eventually. Today, we only have Evan say it. Evan, sorry, you're the best we could do.
Well, I understand. We're conservatives. I'm actually the top person in the entertainment industry. You've done well for yourself.
You and John Voight is right below you. And that's basically all we got. Seriously, you, when I read your bio, I said, I cannot wait to talk to Evan Say It because you have a history. First of all, let's be clear. I'm talking to you specifically because you have a new book out called The Woke Supremacy. When did that book come out?
You know, I put it out in August. In the hopes that it was timely, given the riots, given the pandemic, given the elections, given all the things that were in the news. The problem was the publicity air got sucked out by the riots, the pandemic, the election, and everything else. So I just sort of relaunched it. Let's say I'm kicking it off with you, Eric.
Anybody who launched a book in the middle of the COVID lunacy, which I did as well, and that book is called Seven More Men. It's really crazy. So, yes, we're going to consider this the official launch of the woke supremacy. You really are, Evan, a fascinating figure. I want to obviously the book The Woke Supremacy tells us that you're kind of on my side of the political spectrum. But you have an interesting background. You did comedy, all kinds of stuff that you wouldn't know this because we don't know each other, but that's very close to my heart. So tell us, where did you grow up and what's your career path? How did you end up where you are all these years later?
Sure. I mean, I'm a New York City born liberal, lowercase L Jew in the entertainment industry.
Wait a minute. I do not have Jews on my program. Albin, my producer, how did this happen? How did we get a New York liberal Jew? All right, you know what?
You had no choice. You could get a comedian or a non-Jew. I mean, there's no other choice there.
I'm culturally Jewish, so that's why I could be funny sometimes. But seriously, you grew up in New York. Go ahead. Sir,
just as I was coming of age, just as I was looking for my first job, this industry that never existed anywhere in the history of the world, that still doesn't exist in 93.8% of the world, stand-up comedy boomed. And the reason it boomed in the late 70s, early 80s, was this new technology came along called cable television. And suddenly, instead of three channels needing programming, there were 103 and then 1,003. None of them had any money. So they all needed programming. You don't need any writers. You don't need a script. You don't need anything. You don't even need a background. Just put them in front of a brick wall. You don't need scenery. So all of these channels suddenly started using comedians. And what was perfect for them was as they were trying to establish their brand, if it was the Lifetime channel, the women's channel, you had three female comedians. If it was Black Entertainment Television, you had three Black comedians. So suddenly there was all this work, very few people doing it. And so I was able to make a living in it right from the very start. And it turned out I was actually quite good at it.
And that's kind of weird because you're not that funny. Anybody who knows you vouches for that. No, seriously, Evan, you got your start. I mean, this is like the Holy Grail. Letterman noticed you and thought you were funny. Tell us about that, because Letterman, I've been one of his biggest fans over the years. I even tried to write. I almost wrote for his program. This is in the late 80s. But
I'll tell you a story about that as well. But I was working at NBC. I was working at WNBC Radio. It was an internship. So basically, I was working for free. And if you recognize WNBC, that's because what Howard Stern would make fun of. I was there in exactly the period of Private Parts of his book and his movie.
Lucky you.
When he first got to New York City until a year or two later, Pig Vomit was my boss. And by the way, the reason you said WNBC was because just down the dial was a very similar radio station called WABC. And they wanted to be very clear that you were listening to WNBC. So it really wasn't as bad as Howard made it out to be. But I'm working at NBC, and David decides to do a show. David Letterman decides to do a show. People at NBC who want to be or who are in showbiz, which is a lot of us, I mean, you take the job that you can get while paying the bills. And he saw me, and he asked me if I would do stand-up on the show. And I did, in fact. It was a...
Now, this was right in the beginning of the show.
Right. This was, 1982, let's say.
My friend Carl Tiedemann was probably still working there. Oh, my gosh. This is
probably, but nobody that talked to me, so he may or may not be, you know. I'll tell you a great story about Johnny Carson in a moment about that. But so when now all of a sudden I have this great credit as seen on David Letterman. Well, now not only is there all this work and very few people to fill it, but I've got a legitimate credit. And that catapulted me suddenly to not having to go and do the opening act and scrounging and having a day job. I was able to instantly propel myself to at least middle act status, which could at least pay the bills. So I very, very, very quickly became a full-time comedian. But I tried to write for David. I had the inside track. I actually, by this time, began to know him quite well. He took me under his wing a bit, but I could not write that show.
Well, he also had like the Harvard Mafia around him. They would push people out.
They were actually, yes, indeed they did. And they were very kind to me. Now, not so kind that they gave me the job, but they were not the problem. The problem was that there was this kind of comedy that suddenly came up. The anti-comedian, the not Correct. Funny comedian,
yeah.
The Andy Kaufmans, the people who did things that were so unfunny, it was funny. And most famously, when Andy Kaufman sold out Carnegie Hall and he sat there the entire time, I don't know, $35 a ticket, $50 a ticket at the time. He sat there the entire time and read The Great Gatsby. Now, if you're in the audience, that's not funny, but from that point on, people would say, can you believe what Andy Kaufman did? That's the funniest thing in the world. And there was this sort of not funny comedy that I didn't know how to write.
And so your problem was you were funny. And a comedian in those days really didn't want to be funny.
That's correct. They were the anti-funny.
99% chutzpah and nothing else.
Well, and if you look at it, what happened was there was another cultural change at that time, which was that television went on later and later into the evening. It used to be after The Tonight Show. Perhaps they ran a rerun of McMillan and Wife or, some cop show, McCloud. And then you heard the Star Spangled Banner and the white noise.
And you go to the test pattern with the American Indian.
Exactly. And suddenly people said, the network said, we're not doing anything with that hour after The Tonight Show. We're not doing anything with that 90 minutes on Saturday. Let's give it to the kids. And they gave some schmuck named Lorne Michaels, a kid from Canada. The hell? Do what you want with the show. And they gave Letterman the hour after Johnny and said, do whatever you want with the show. And they were not going to be their parents' comedians. They were going to be the opposite of their parents' comedians. They were going to be the unfunny comedians. And I didn't know how to write unfunny.
That's why we like you. That's why you're on this program. Evan, say it. S-A-Y-E-T. Say it. We're going to be talking to you in the rest of this program about your new book, The Woke Supremacy. But I just love the idea that you go from comedy to writing about where we are now. So what happened in between? Did you move to L.A. from New York?
I moved very shortly thereafter because while I couldn't write for Letterman, I was perfect for Johnny Carson. And so I asked my now friend, David Letterman, would he please send a package out to his connections? He's already been guest hosting that show for years whatnot. His friend Peter LaSalle and Ray Siller, who was the head writer at the time. And I put together a package, and LaSalle got it. The producer got it and said, this is great. I'm giving it to the head writer. The head writer said, this is great. I'm giving it to Johnny. And Johnny was going through a miserable divorce. Nothing was funny to him. So I did not get the job.
But hold on. We gotta pause there. First of all, when we come back, we're going to talk about Johnny Carson. We're going to talk about Peter LaSalle, and we're going to talk about Carson's ex-wives. And then we're going to talk to Evan Sayet about the book, The Woke Supremacy. Don't go away. Hey there, folks. How many years have I been telling you about Relief Factor? What, like four? The truth is, I know there are millions of people, in fact, some say over 100 million people struggling with some kind of pain, maybe from exercise, just getting older. That could do it, getting older, which is why I am so impressed with Pete and Seth Talbot. They are on a mission. You rarely see this kind of focus and commitment. Seriously, they recently shared with me that they are doubling down and want to literally double their total number of happy customers in the next year, and I believe they'll do it. So here's the deal. If you're struggling with back, neck, shoulder, hip, or knee pain, even general muscle aches and pains, then I'm suggesting you order their 3-week quick start, still discounted to only $19.95, about a dollar a day, to see if we can get you out of pain too. And then after that, less than the cost of a cup of coffee a day to stay out of pain. Go to relieffactor.com, relieffactor.com, or call 800-500-8384, relieffactor.com, 800-500-8384. I use it. It works. Check it out. Hey folks, Eric Metaxas here. Like you, I am sick of hearing about big tech companies spying on their customers, selling their data, and not being able to keep their platforms safe and secure. Luckily, I found SquadPod, a private platform that helps businesses, organizations, churches, and nonprofits take back control of their communication. SquadPod has three things going for it that other companies do not. First, SquadPod puts you in control of who is a part of your team, what they see, and how they interact with the group. Second, SquadPod is 100% owned and operated in the United States. Third, SquadPod is simple to use. Just create an account, invite your team, and start communicating via their secure video and messaging features. Learn more at squadpod.com/Eric. That's squadpod.com/Eric. Let me say it again, squadpod.com/Eric. Check it out. Folks, I'm talking to somebody who's very funny. His name is Evan Sayet, S-A-Y-E-T, claims to be a New York Jew. And I think you're probably the first New York Jew we've had on this program. Congratulations, Evan Sayet. Welcome.
I don't even believe I'm the first New York Jew on your show today.
It's not even, it's of course, I'm joking, but you've written a book called The Woke Supremacy. I want to get to that, but you know, I'm a frustrated comedy writer, and I want to talk to you more about, you know, you had the privilege of knowing Letterman in the heyday, and he helped you to get to The Tonight Show. So what happened? The Tonight Show said, nah, we're not interested.
Yeah, Johnny was going through a miserable divorce. And by the way, I remember the very first joke, because he did use some of the material I sent out. The very first joke. Now, you wouldn't be able to do this joke today because it's body shaming. And you have to remember the reference is, I guess, now 35, maybe even, gosh.
Is this a Toadie Fields joke or a Mama Cass Elliott joke?
Sort of. All right. Remember Karnak the Magnificent? The answer is hip, hip, hooray. The question, describe Liz Taylor putting on her jeans.
That is a great joke. What do you mean you can't do a joke like that today? That is a great joke. You just did it on this program. I love it. Hip, hip. So has that ever appeared anywhere?
Yes, every time I'm on the air.
Every time you're on the air. Hip, hip, hooray. Well, when you write a joke like that, that's like I think Dick Cavett's first major joke was there's a new restaurant and it's Chinese German. The only problem is an hour after you eat there, you're hungry for power.
that's a
stupid joke. But I mean, it's anyway. Okay. So hip, hip, hooray.
Now, can I tell a slightly off color joke?
If you don't, we'll be offended.
All right. The first joke that I ever sold to Rodney was my sex life. It's like a Star Wars character, Han Solo.
Hans Solo. I'm glad we don't get that joke. So anyway,
in the interim,
the fact of the matter is that you're a comedy writer. Where do you go from, you know, not getting a job with Johnny Carson, you know, to where we are today? I mean, you've been working everywhere. You were involved with Arsenio Hall.
I wrote the Al Smith dinner speech for President Trump.
You're kidding.
I wrote both of them, the one he did in 2016, that's infamous, and the one they didn't do in 2020 because of a last-second decision by Andrew Cuomo to shut it down.
So the Al Smith did. So that speech has never been given publicly.
The 2016 one was, and
no, the new one, the next one.
The 2021 was not. You want to hear the first couple of jokes?
You darn right we do.
All right, so he comes out. You know the event, and you know it well, I'm assuming.
Well, it's a famous Catholic dinner in New York, and they always get, they've always got the cardinal, and then they've got the people from both parties who are running.
Both candidates, correct.
The Democrat and the Republican. So he was going to give a speech, and then Cuomo canceled the whole thing.
That is correct. It was all set up. They were already I'd written it. It had been approved. They were going to, and Cuomo said it's a spreader. It's a virus spreader. We can't have it. So they just delivered rather regular stump speeches on camera through, so it wasn't the event in the slightest.
Right.
But what I had is I had the president come out and say, I know a lot of you are surprised to see me again. They said last time it would take a miracle for me to win. And I want to thank you for that, Your Eminence.
But I'm
okay. Hold on. He says, you know, now this time they say it's a long shot again that I have any chance of winning. In fact, they say there's better chance there'll be peace in the Middle East. Then he gives that face that he gives because he brought peace to the Middle East.
Right. And people would have gotten that joke a year ago. Today, it's less obvious.
Well, you should have had me on a year ago then.
I know. No, I like it.
Don't blame the writer here, Eric. Don't blame the writer. Blame the producer.
Jokes. That was good. That was solid. Keep going.
All right, so I find so I fly out to L.A. and I moved to L.A. thinking I'm going to get the Carson job. How can I not? David recommended me. The producer of the show loved it. The head writer loved it. It was just really just a formality for Johnny to check off on. Why does he care who's in the writer's room? You know,
what happened?
Johnny was losing a lot of money to yet another ex-wife, and he was just not in a good mood. And he just said, no, I don't think it had anything to do with me. You know, I thought nothing was funny to him at that point. But now I live in Los Angeles. And David introduced me to one of his best friends, who is now one of my best friends some 40 years later still, a comedian named Tom Dreesen.
Yes, I know Tom Dreesen's work, you bet.
All right. And so he said to me, you know, I called my friend Tom. He knows you're coming. He knows you're a comedy, a joke writer. No guarantees, except that he'll read your stuff. And so I went to see Tom, and he bought a couple of jokes. And all right, so now I'm sitting in my motel room or, you know, Oakwood apartments, if you remember them. And I'm writing this bit and it's funny, but it's not Tom. So I could have stopped right there and said, you know what? I need the money. I work for this guy. But I wrote it all the way out. And I said to myself, you know who this sounds like? This sounds like that comedian Jerry Seinfeld, who's doing so well these days. Not quite Seinfeld yet, but Seinfeld. So I keep it in my pocket. I keep the bit in my pocket as I go to the improv night after night after night after night. And one night Jerry's there and I introduce myself. I say, hi, I'm Evan Sayet. I write for Tom Dreesen. Do you buy material? And he said, no, I don't. I take a lot of pride in the fact that I write all my own stuff. So I could have stopped right there, but I didn't. I said, Jerry, do me a favor. I'm new in town. I don't know a lot of people. Do me a favor. Just read this. I think it sounds just like you. That way, at least you know what I do. So he says, sure. And he reads it and he says, Evan, this is great. It's perfect for me. I just don't buy material. Okay, thank you. I go to sit at the table with Tom. Not 5 minutes, Eric, not 5 minutes goes by when this big hand slaps the table and says, Tom, I need a writer. Tom says, Evan's a writer. This guy says, Evan, say it. I said, yeah. He said, Jerry Seinfeld just recommended you. I got my second client, the guy named George Wallace, a comedian named George Wallace.
George Wallace. It's a tight group there. I know George Wallace, Dreesen. It's so interesting to hear because I know that I almost wrote for Seinfeld, too. I'm not even joking for the show, but it's so fascinating what a small world it is. So George Wallace, but not the governor, buys your material. And now you're writing for George Wallace and Tom Dreesen.
Now I've got two clients and the same kind of thing happens with a third client. And during this time, I'm continuing to work on my standup. They had made me the nighttime MC at the Improv, which at that point, you know how in Casablanca, everybody goes to Rick's? Well, at that point, everybody went to the Improv. Everybody all the time, every night. And I was the nighttime, the nighttime MC. And so I sort of made my way up and toured and did okay, did well. But then my kid was born and I didn't want to be on the road 40 weeks a year.
I told you never to have kids.
It wasn't my fault. Eric, I wasn't even in the room.
I believe you. Now, seriously, though, you had a kid. And now what happens? What happens to you now?
Okay, so I start to write for television shows. First, I write the Arsenio Hall show for a couple of years, right as it on the cover of Time magazine and whatnot. In fact, if you're wondering, just take a moment and recognize for 2 years, I was the voice of Black America.
You know, and I was going to say, I wouldn't have guessed that, but I know that that is true. And listen, people don't realize how much writing goes into a program like that. I mean, you know, these guys, they got to have material every single night. It's incredible. I almost want to have a show just so I could hire you because I know you're good at this. So let me ask you, you work for Arsenio. So this is now what? This is the night we're into the 90s now.
91, 92. Yep. And then shortly thereafter, I spent the next several, many years, 4, 5, maybe even 6 years, writing for Politically Incorrect with Bill Maher.
Now, he's got a real potty mouth, that guy. We can't have him on this program. But so you work for Political Record with Bill Maher.
He's only half Jewish, so you can have him.
Ha. Well, you're behind the scenes at a lot of huge shows. Where do you go from Bill Maher? I can't even think here. What's next?
Well, for me, it was some of my own projects. I see the wrap it up sign coming up.
This is something. No. Don't worry about it. That's just my producer, Alvin. He just needs something to do. I tell you what, just to make him feel better, we will wrap it up. But we're going to be back, folks. I'm talking to Evan Sayet, S-A-Y-E-T. The book is The Woke Supremacy. I know you're already interested in it. So why don't you get a copy and we'll be right back. Hey folks, you certainly heard me talk about MyPillow and how their products have literally changed my life. Now, have you tried the pillow? They don't go flat. You can wash them, dry them as many times as you want, and they maintain their shape. They're made in the USA, and for a limited time, Mike Lindell is offering his premium MyPillows for the lowest price ever. You can get a standard queen premium MyPillow for $29.98. It's originally $69.98. That's a $40 savings. Kings are only $5 more. Remember, all MyPillow products come with a 60-day money-back guarantee and a 10-year warranty. Just go to MyPillow.com, click on the radio listener square, and use promo code ERIC. There you'll find not only this amazing offer, but also deep discounts on all MyPillow products, including the Giza Dream Bed Sheets, the MyPillow Mattress Topper, and MyPillow Towel Sets. Folks, you know I use these products, and they're fantastic. Call 800-978-3057 and use promo code ERIC. Or call 800-978-3057. Use the promo code ERIC.
What is the worth of a soul to Christ? Is it the same now as it was 2,000 years ago? In Pillars of Barabbas, author M.D. House shows how the times of the early Christian church differed little from our own, including the treacherous moral and political waters Christ's saints have always had to navigate with his abiding help. Everything they did and said is applicable to our day, and we are fundamentally no better than them. For instance, the Apostle Paul did not fear revered the Roman Emperor Nero. He served the Lord of Lords and King of Kings. True followers of Christ should always influence secular rule so that his church can be the beacon on a hill inviting all to come unto him. Order this powerful testimonial, Pillars of Barabbas by M.D. House, now on Amazon, and feel the inspiring legacy left to us by those faithful followers of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ.
Folks, you know Mike Lindell is the main sponsor of this program, MyPillow.com, but we have a new sponsor, and I'm excited actually about this sponsor. We'll be talking about them more in the weeks ahead, but they're called Nutramedics. That's M-E-D-I-X, Nutramedics. They are a professional supplement brand trusted by doctors since 1993, and they're now available to us. I have begun to take them. Everything you take, they make. So why would you go with anybody else when Nutramedics, are you ready for this? They give more than 50% of all their profits to missions and to charities. It's unbelievable. So if you have a choice, where do I get my vitamin D? Where do I get Nutramedics.com? If you use the code Eric, I think it's Eric10, whatever it is that you buy, zinc, magnesium, all the stuff, and I'll tell you about it at another time, but Nutramedics.com, use the code Eric10, Eric10. Folks, I'm talking to Evan Sayet, S-A-Y-E-T, comedian and the writer of a new book called The Woke Supremacy. Evan, you just said that you're familiar with my books. I did not know that.
Well, of course. And I suspect all literate, educated, caring, loving people would be well aware of your entire catalog. Well,
anybody in that group would have to have several copies of each of my many wonderful books. Thank you very much. Now, you've written The Woke Supremacy. I want to get to that, but we're still talking about your comedy career. So you're doing all these different things, doing your own projects. At what point do you become aware that you want to write about the woke world, the woke culture? Because I think any old time liberal is today a conservative because they're disgusted with the cancel culture. They're disgusted with Marxist lunacy. And so you've got a lot of people, including folks like Bill Maher and Seinfeld. They're disgusted with the cancel culture. They can't speak at colleges. They can't, you know, they don't have that freedom that we had a few years ago.
Yeah, I wasn't quite there yet in the story that we're telling. What happened for me is I call myself a 9/13 Republican. All right. 9/11 didn't surprise me. All right. Obviously, I didn't know the date. I didn't know the targets. I didn't know that the carnage would be so awful. But even as a brain dead liberal, I knew just enough about the world to know the same people who were murdering the Jews of Israel for no other reason than they were the closest infidels, who are murdering the Hindus in India for no other reason than they were the closest infidels, who'd been murdering children in Beslan, Russia for no other reason than they were the closest infidels, would, when they could find a way over those oceans, come and get the big infidel, the great Satan. Of course they would. Now, what surprised me was what I call 9/12. And that was the liberal response to the attacks, the idea that we deserve them, that it was the chickens coming home to roost, in the words of my president's spiritual mentor. The idea that the way to prevent further attacks was to be nicer to the terrorists. This was insane to me, Eric. And I had to think, aren't we as liberals, aren't we supposed to hate religious fanatics? And yet they were defending the most fanatically religious sect on the planet. I had to start thinking about what I believed. And Eric, I have an expression. The first time you think is the last time you're a Democrat.
Oh, that's a great line.
I know.
That should be the title of a book, my friend. That's the title of a book. That's like bing, very nice. Say it again. It's just too so sweet. Go ahead.
The first time you think is the last time you're a Democrat.
That's a good title, Evan. I'm going to steal that if you don't. You need to write a short, funny book with that title.
You know what? You write it.
No, I can't. That's really good. Okay, so, well, the new book is The Woke Supremacy, so I want to get to that. So let's, where do we go? How do we get to The Woke Supremacy?
So at that moment, when I began to recognize there's something quite wrong, that I'm not, if that's what a liberal is, then that's what I'm not. And I began to think about all of the other issues one by one that I had simply taken the narrative and the orthodoxies of the left as granted, as givens, and one by one began to think them through. So I did two things at once then. I realized this really is a culture war and I need to be a part of it. What weapon, what tool, what skill do I possess that our side seems to be missing? And we just didn't have a Bill Maher for the right. We didn't have a Jon Stewart for the right. And so for the first time in 15 years, I put together a stand-up act, only this time with a purpose. I weaponized it. I was going to be the Bill Maher for the right. And I think I've accomplished that. In fact, if you wish, you can see my hour-long special called Evan Say It, A Deplorable Mind on Amazon Prime. If you have Amazon Prime, it's free to Amazon Prime subscribers. At the same time, I began to seriously think about why it is that good, smart, loving people like my friends on the political left reject fact and reason and side only and always with evil, failure, and wrong. And I started to come up with this thought and this turned into a book eventually and a speech that I gave to the Heritage Foundation, which Andrew Breitbart called one of the five most important conservative speeches ever given. And it remains 13 years later, the single most viewed lecture in their entire history, in which I explained how the modern liberal thinks. And that book, that speech catapulted me into legitimacy as a conservative political pundit, thinker,
and where can we find that speech?
That speech is on my website, evansayit.com. It's at heritage.org. I'll tell you how crazy popular that was. As it was going viral, National Review, Kathy Lopez, I think it was, at National Review Online, posted a bulletin. It said, "This talk by Evan Say It," and they linked to it. "This talk by Evan Say It is cramming our inboxes. Please stop sending it." Everybody was saying,
"I know Kalo, Catherine Lopez. She's a wonderful, wonderful woman. And I love the idea that that was happening. That is so cool. So what year was that?"
That was 2006 or seven. I think it was 2007.
Right.
March 14th at 3 p.m.
Go to evansayit.com, S-A-Y-E-T.com. So that's one of the five most important political speeches that Breitbart ever knew about. I don't know what the others were, but he told me I had two of the top five. So we're very close.
Wow. So we've got three of the five between us.
That's right. That's right. So keep going.
All right. So I give that talk and when I do, I start to receive emails one after another with a very odd phrase in it. People kept saying, "Do you know what you have there? You've got the unified field theory of liberalism. Once you understand what I said in that talk, you understand everything you need to know about why good, smart, decent people reject fact and reason and side with wrong."
Now everybody's going to want to see this speech. It sounds a little bit like Dennis Prager. He does this kind of stuff. He's not quite as funny as you, but people need to go to evansayit.com. We're going to be right back. I forgot the word back. We'll be right back. I'm talking to the author of a new book called The Woke Supremacy, Evan Say It, S-A-Y-E-T. Evan, is The Woke Supremacy nearly as funny as your other stuff?
No, actually, I very much try to keep my serious and my funny. I try to keep the two separate because, Eric, I make certain claims in my various works, my serious works, that if I was being a comedian, you might think is hyperbole. You know, you might say, "Oh, is he saying that just for the reaction?" For example, I legitimately argue that the modern liberal, now the woke, have been morally and intellectually stunted in their growth at the age of five. Why five? Because that's when they enter kindergarten and the machine gets a hold of them on a full-time basis for the first time. But if I were being funny in my book, they say, "Oh, he just means they're immature. You know, he means, you know," but right. I don't. I mean, literally the age of five. So my serious works are serious and my comedic works are funny.
So no pies in the face, no soupy sales shtick in this book, The Woke Supremacy. All right. Well, important ideas sometimes have to be expressed seriously. I've written a number of serious books myself.
We know we love them. We read them. We have them all.
That really does thrill me. I don't know. Now, how does a Jewish man in Los Angeles come across my books? Like, that's just not, you know, my demographic.
Well, that's not exactly true. First of all, you've been on the radio here. And also,
now that you mention it, yep.
I've long, please, we're in, people don't understand this about Los Angeles, but we have long been an intellectual hub of conservatism. Whether it's Dennis Prager and PragerU, whether it's Ben Shapiro on the Daily Wire, whether it's David Horowitz in the Freedom Center, whether it's my old friend of mine, Karen Sigmund, and the American Freedom Alliance. Then there are freelance folks who are quite genius, including my friend Bill Whittle, if you know him at all.
I only know his name, but that you know, you're right. It's kind of amazing to think of L.A. as kind of an intellectual hub for anything, but you're absolutely right. Okay, we got to get to this book here. So you wrote The Woke Supremacy. Tell us about this book. I hope people will buy copies. Tell us about it.
Well, it's actually been called one of the three most important books of its time in American history. The other
now, define two, time. Are you talking an afternoon or a longer period?
The others are Thomas Paine's Common Sense at the time of the Revolutionary War and Harry Beecher Stowe's Uncle Tom's Cabin at the time of the Civil War, because it serves exactly the same purpose, which is to provide the moral clarity, the actual issue that is going to require us to fight if we are, in fact, to fight, which I do believe.
Now, who had the temerity, the chutzpah, if you will, to compare the woke supremacy to Thomas Paine's Common Sense and Harry Beecher Stowe's?
Numerous people. In fact, I will send you a whole list of the reviews this book has gotten. It's been called an essential element in our defense by Colonel Gordon Kukulu, author of Inside Gitmo.
And Kukulu hates everything. So that tells you right there.
Seriously,
this is terrific. You laugh a little bit too much like Krusty the Clown. I'm getting a compliment. The Woke Supremacy is the title of the book. All right. So we know you're funny, but you obviously are also very serious. In this book, you get serious because you understand we're at a crucial moment in the history of the Republic. This is an existential crisis, no different than 1776 or 1860. I have actually said that myself many, many times, because here we are, and those with eyes to see that we need to wake up. So the woke supremacy, I suppose, will help people to see where we are.
That's what people from Sebastian Gorka, just all the way up and down the line, Kurt Schlichter at Town Hall, it has not received anything other than rave reviews, with the exception of one or two trolls on Amazon who aren't even verified purchasers. People are recognizing this is not a, it is the book for exactly this moment. And Eric, I wrote it to be the book. I was sitting home watching the riots break out, and I'm listening to the pundits, the politicians, even some of the participants. And none of them really seem to know who the woke are, where they came from, what they want, what they're willing to do to get it, and what will befall humanity if somehow we continue to allow them to win. And so I sat down to do what I did with my earlier book, which was called which was described as The Unified Field Theory of Liberalism, to put down the unified field theory of wokeism. And I believe I've accomplished that.
And people can, of course, find it at evansayit.com, Evan, S-A-Y-E-T.com. Well, let's talk about some of the stuff in the book. We don't have a ton of time, but let's cover some of the stuff.
Most essentially, it has to be understood that wokeism is, in fact, a supremacist movement. The hallmark of a supremacist movement isn't that there's prejudice, isn't that there's bigotry, isn't that there's injustice. That's any society. The hallmark, the defining trait of a supremacist movement is the belief that all rights, privileges, and protections of society belong only to those who possess a supreme trait.
Okay, so it's a fundamentally un-American, anti-American philosophy.
And I pit American nationalism versus the supremacism, which also includes socialism, because socialism is the system preferred by supremacists. Obviously, you want the handful of your people controlling everything. So do the woke believe all rights, privileges, and protections should belong only to the woke? They believe freedom of speech should belong only to those who are woke. If you're not woke, you should be disempowered and silenced. They believe freedom of assembly, freedom of association, due process. Eric, even the right to hold a job, they believe, should belong not only to the woke, but to only those who are purely woke, Look at the story of the editor-in-chief at Teen Vogue, who was perfectly woke for the last, so woke that she kept moving up through the ranks until it was discovered that 10 years ago as a child, she tweeted something unwoke, and that was enough to see her disempowered and her voice literally silenced.
Well, I hope she wakes up or some of them wake up. I mean, Teen Vogue is right out of the pit of hell, and I say that as a friend. But seriously, it's an amazing thing. You're absolutely right. Now, in your book, The Woke Supremacy, you talk about all this stuff with knowledge. Does it not fascinate you that many of our leaders in Congress and the Senate don't seem to understand these ideas and don't seem to understand that we need to take radical action to save the republic?
It's not wholly surprising because they do, in fact, live in a bubble. These people next to them are their colleagues and friends. They're not the ones setting fire to cities. They're not the ones. It's just how business is done in a collegial environment. And in fact, I wrote an article, which is the single most read article in Town Hall's entire history, called He Fights.
Holy cow, He Fights. All right, we're going to go to a break. Is there anything you've done that has been mediocre? I think you need to. This is where you failed. Everything you do is great. That's not
other than this show. No,
we'll be right back. That was good. That was good. It was so funny. We're going to keep you for another segment. Don't go away, folks. Folks, I'm talking to my former friend, Evan Sayet, SAYET.com, EvanSayet.com. Evan, the book is The Woke Supremacy. We really were just talking about the fact that the ruling class in America don't have a clue about how bad things are. And because of them, it's really up to us to fight. The people at the top, they're useless.
Indeed. But the other thing to take notice of is people in the middle and even at the bottom don't know how bad things are. What most people don't recognize is how close to paradise our greatest generation left America. We are the first peoples in all of human history to not really have to worry about disease, communicable disease. Chickenpox, smallpox, polio, vanquished. We don't really have to worry about poverty. Even if you're begging for a dollar on the street, you can go to the 99-cent only store and get a TV dinner. You know, we're the only people to have never really had to worry about war because America had been so strong and our system had been so well embraced by so much of the world that war, which was commonplace from the beginning of time until recently, is just not a consideration. So I don't just think it's the elite who live in a bubble. I think it's a good many of the people born after World War II who simply have no idea that bad things can happen.
Well, listen, we are tracking absolutely perfectly. You're taking words out of my mouth. Nonetheless, I mean, it's because of that the elites can get away with not leading on this, because the people have elected foolish non-leaders, not just on the Democratic side, but on both sides.
Indeed. I that sounded like something I was supposed to take and run with, but I mean, you nailed it. So I got,
well, I mean, but it's so fascinating because you're quite right. I mean, I talk about this stuff all the time. And in fact, I want to send you a copy of my book, If You Can Keep It, which talks about a lot of this stuff. So when we get off the air, I'll get your address. But it's very important that we lay this out. So The Woke Supremacy is your book. People like lots of friends of mine, Dinesh D'Souza, Sebastian Gorka, they've all raved about it. And so I'm excited to have you on. What are you doing when you're not promoting your book?
Oh, sleeping. I mean, it really is all either promoting my book, writing something more, and partly because for the last year, I've been in quite literally, and I don't use the word literally, I believe the least in-demand profession in all of human history. Public speaker during a global pandemic.
Right.
You know,
that's absolutely right. Yeah. So said you do a lot of sleeping. I want to remind my listeners, they need to go to MyPillow.com. Use the code Eric. Yes, MyPillow.com. If you use the other codes, if you don't use Eric, it goes right into Nancy Pelosi's pocketbook and she gives it to her nephew, Gavin Newsom. You want that to happen? No, you don't. So use the code Eric, MyPillow.com. So look, you're in Los Angeles, But you said you spent a lot of time in Texas. That's kind of healthy. I like that.
It's actually the other way around these days. I live in Texas, but I spend a lot of time still in California. Especially, look, I was 35 years in Los Angeles. So opportunities to speak. Right now, I still have to convince people in Texas to hire me, whereas the people who know me here. So I'm here on a little bit of a book tour.
A little bit. I love it. Well, I love the fact that you made time to stop by here. You are a new old friend, and we want to have you back as soon as possible, just because I know we've only scratched the surface. I wanted people to hear your story, Evan, and I wanted to hear it myself. So it's wonderful that we got that out of the way. Now we can just talk about the woke supremacy the next time we come back. Folks, I don't want to forget to remind you, Church People is a film that's available at SalemNow.com. There's all kinds of stuff available at SalemNow.com. You can check it out. If you use the code Eric, who knows what will happen? Who knows? My Pillow will send you slippers. Just use the code Eric and good things will happen. SalemNow.com. Church People is the film. Folks, go to EvanSayIt.com. It's SAYET.com. Get a copy of The Woke Supremacy. Evan, thank you so much for everything. We'd love to have you back as soon as we can.
Eric, I'd love to come back quickly, soon.